You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry in for Tanzina Vega. And this Saturday, Black communities around the country will be observing Juneteenth with pageants, parades, festivals, and family gatherings. But for all this celebration, Juneteenth is not an uncomplicated holiday. Because Juneteenth not only celebrates freedom, it also commemorates theft. The theft of two full years when Black people in Texas remained enslaved despite the fact that the Emancipation Proclamation had legally granted them freedom. Juneteenth is about what is gained, but it is also about what was lost. Time. And time matters. It matters in ways that are racialized and radicalized. Think of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. explaining why we can't wait as he spoke of, quote, the fierce urgency of now. King said in 1967, quote, in this unfolding conundrum of life and history, there is such a thing as being too late. Or turn to the words of scholar Brittany Cooper, who makes this claim about time in her 2019 TED Talk.
We Black people have always been out of time. Time does not belong to us. Our lives are lives of perpetual urgency.
So what does all of that mean? Let's just look at a few examples. Take the COVID-19 pandemic, which saw an already significant life expectancy gap widen even further. In just 6 months in 2020, Black men lost 3 years of life expectancy. Time. Let's also look at Black labor. At the turn of the century, there were codes, laws that made it illegal to rest, illegal to take time off. And then think about Juneteenth. This holiday exists because for 2 years, Black people in parts of Texas were kept in bondage, even when as a matter of law, they should have been free. 2 years stolen from Black people after all the decades and centuries of time that had already been stolen by slavery itself. So when we hear people like Congresswoman Maxine Waters insist that she is reclaiming her time,
reclaiming my time,
several times,
reclaiming my
when
time,
we were doing our
it's an act of rebellion, of freedom. To control one's time is to resist.
Reclaiming my time.
The time belongs to the gentlelady from California.
Let me just say to you, thank you for your compliments about how great I am, but I don't want to waste my time on me.
Here to talk more about race and time is Professor Brittany Cooper, professor at Rutgers University and author of Eloquent Rage, A Black Feminist Discovers Her Superpower. Brittany, always so great to have an opportunity to talk to you.
Hey, Melissa. Good to talk to you.
So I've been spending a lot of time with your 2019 TED Talk on time. Let me play one more clip.
Sure. For if time had a race, it would be white. White people own time.
All right. Expand on that.
Look, I was being provocative, but essentially trying to say that white people, particularly during the, you know, during the era of, you know, European exploration and colonization, decided that Black people were not a part of history. And so they made these huge philosophical claims like Africa is no historical part of the world and that everything that happened where Black folks lived was prehistoric and therefore not particularly significant. So they offered a concept of time that was really about their own desires for power, which meant that, for instance, when they, you know, sailed across the ocean and took land from indigenous people, what they were essentially asserting is that everything that had happened before Europeans showed up didn't matter. That's an argument about time. But I also like the way that George Lipsitz puts it in a more sort of recent iteration where he says, look, white people act and I'm paraphrasing. He says, white people act like they own time because when Black people make claims about we want freedom now, you know, white people are like, well, just hold on. Let's be gradual. Slow down. Right. All of that is about saying that they get to control the pace at which Black people are included in the democratic experiment.
And I think for me, that aspect, that idea of weight, pause is part of what makes this Juneteenth moment so painful that on the one hand, it is that celebration of freedom, but it's also like, y'all, two more whole years after everything else that was stolen. And when I think of what was lost in those 2 years, like, I feel like we have to really let that sink in.
Yeah. I mean, look, there were Black people who didn't live to see the end of that 2 years, right? Black people who were legally free, who died under conditions of enslavement because somebody simply callously refused to tell them. And when we think about the way, the simplicity of white racial devastation in Black lives, that simply the withholding of information makes the difference between whether you are in control of your will, your body, your life, your time, or someone else is, it's absolutely staggering. And it deserves for us to take a breath and to really sit with the profundity of that.
I spoke with Alma Adams earlier this week, Representative Alma Adams, about the delay occurring in the USDA's meant to be, you know, payout for debt relief for Black farmers. It's been delayed now by the courts. And again, I was thinking about this issue of time. How many more acres of land will be lost because of time?
That's right. I mean, look, I was infuriated when I saw these farmers have waited forever. And when we think about the fact that so much of Black people's contribution and labor to the country has been in the space of agriculture, and that farmers were discriminated against by the USDA, that this was the government finally admitting that they did something wrong and that they owed redress, and then 12 conservative white farmers could slow that up. So even the government acting on behalf of Black people can be stopped by politically motivated judges, and you know, like 12, you know, just barely enough, just a little bit over what it takes to have a football team can stop the flow of progress. That's entirely too much power to have. You know, it makes me think even politically when we, you know, like this is why I'm so mad sometimes at the way that Joe Manchin wields power, because it doesn't occur to him that one white man should not be able to determine whether Black people have a secure form of participating in democracy or not. But that's this incredible white ability uniquely to slow down time.
So I want to think about another aspect of lost time that or stolen. But I want to think really specifically about this pandemic and the effect of the lost time relative to education. And particularly this gap, which had already existed between students in schools with a lot of resources and students in schools with very few resources. We know that also tends to be racialized, and it widened so dramatically over the past two academic years. I'm just wondering about how we even begin to think about reclaiming that time and creating some time justice for those young people.
No, it's a really good question. And I'm not sure that I have the solution. But what I think, I mean, look, I had a brief stint as a middle school reading teacher before I went on to become an academic. And one of the things we knew at the time was that for every year that a kid falls behind in terms of reaching their reading benchmarks, it takes them 2 years to make that time up. And so when we're talking about 2 years of lost time, we're really talking about 4 years of lost time. And so I think that we've got to have a full court press here to say, you know, we've got to resource schools more. We've got to figure out how to give people access to the digital tools and resources that they need. I also think, though, that we've got to figure out a different pipeline. And so maybe it becomes the case that folks that we sort of think about education on an extended timeline. And so what does it mean to say that, you know, we'll pay for the, you know, community college, we'll pay for your, you know, some portion of your undergraduate education, and that we'll pay for those benefits, you know, beyond the initial amount of time that it would have taken you to get through K through 12. So we'll add an additional 2 years onto that. But some of this has to be, I think, a broader cultural shift about us not stigmatizing this kind of winner take all process that's about overachievers, that says there's to be a linear end to, you know, you go through K through 12, you go through college, you make it into the middle class. It's such a limiting narrative. It never worked for Black people to begin with. And I do think that all of the kids that graduated from high school in this time frame and started college, because they've had to take gap years and all of this and have had such disruption, I think they're going to show us what it means to redefine what you do with this, you know, this life stage break that none of us asked for.
I so appreciate that you make that point that when time doesn't work for Black folks in a particular way, it usually means it is problematic, oppressive in these broader ways as well. And so addressing it is good for us all in important ways. So let's talk about reclaiming our time in this moment when work and home life have blurred, when the hours that people put in are so much longer. How can we begin to think about reclaiming our time?
I mean, look, my favorite quote from the Maxine Waters conversation with Steve Mnuchin is when she said, "You forget that when you are on my time, I can reclaim it." And I think that that assertion of like, hey, white folks' calendars aren't the only calendars that matter, are important. And so one of the places I actually see this happening is the way that, you know, workers and sort of essential workers and laborers in minimum wage labor are not rushing back to jobs that devalue their time structurally. And they're like, wait, we're going to take this, you know, government, you know, half funded sabbatical. It's not really that, but the government actually doing something right to take care of its citizens. And we're going to think about where we want to be. I love that, because when do folks who work minimum wage jobs actually get the time to take a beat and say, how do I want to go about the rest of my life? I think that that's a reclamation of time. And I think that's also why you're seeing such, such anger on the right about, you know, how dare these folks not go back into these terrible jobs with poor benefits and even worse pay.
But doesn't it feel like those Black codes that said, if you're not employed by the white man, then you can be incarcerated? I mean, I just keep feeling like the underlying source is like, why won't these folks just go back and work these jobs that don't even bother to pay a living wage?
Absolutely. I mean, look, all of the, you know, we're continually dealing with a labor system that gets its prototype and its, you know, its sort of blueprint from the exploitation of Black labor and the sense that Black people are supposed to be working all the time, but also that Black people and increasingly Brown people, that we're all supposed to be working so that white people can lead lives of ease. And that at any point that we disrupt that, you know, I've been reading slave narratives, just as part of my own sort of Juneteenth commemoration, and folks talked about the harsh punishments when they, you know, when they didn't get up for work quickly. But the thing that I loved is that even during periods of enslavement, sometimes Black people were like, look, I'm just going to take this nap and I'll deal with the consequences. And, you know, the consequences were terrible for them. But I think that part of the then mandate for us is to do like Trisha Hershey says in the Nap Ministry, which is take the nap. Take the day off, take the paid time off. Don't rush back to these terrible jobs. Put the government in a position where it has to negotiate, you know, where it forces these businesses to raise their wages. You know, every state isn't going to do that. Some of them are just going to strip these benefits. But I do think that these workers are forcing the conversation. And I just think that's so important.
All right, listen, you just revolutionized my whole thought about planning for future Juneteenth events. No more having to cook all day. I think we should just put out red, black, and green mats and say, listen, Black folks are taking a nap today. We'll get back with you on June 20th.
That's right. We were claiming our 2.5 years that you stole and all the other things that you stole. But I also wanted to say, too, one of the quotes that keeps me anchored when I, you know, think about this, because, you know, often Black people are like, well, we don't want, you know, we need to be grinding. You know, they grind, you know, they sleep, we grind, all of this stuff. And it's like, A, reject that. But B, James Baldwin is one of the most trenchant thinkers on this. And in his, you know, in his 1980s book, The Price of the Ticket, he says, look, how much time do you want for your progress? And that is the thing that I think that Black people have to start thinking about. We have to reclaim time by saying, how much time do we actually need to make up for all that has been stolen? And while I don't know that we will ever be able to reach historical parity on that point, I do think we have to start making it up in every intentional demand that we have for joy, for rest, for, you know, look, because in the end, we can't win the battle always with longevity, because of course things like COVID come in and decimate our communities. And in a moment when you can't quite figure out how to extend lifespan, what you can do is battle for quality of life. And that's something that people with disabilities have taught me. They say, look, you know, in their theory of crypt time, they say, look, sometimes the way our bodies are set up, we don't get a long time. But what we can demand from the government and from those around us is that the time that we do have is quality time. And I do think that Black people have to start thinking about how to fill up the space that we do have.
Yes. And I'll remind you, you are not your ancestors' wildest dream. Their wildest dream was for joy and for freedom in their own lifetime. So we're going to have to fulfill our own wildest dreams by reclaiming our time. Brittany Cooper is a friend of mine. She's also a professor at Rutgers University and the author of Eloquent Rage, A Black Feminist Discovers Her Superpower. Brittany, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Good to talk to you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.